ஜயபதி ஜனவல்லவாகிரிவர்தாரி. ஜயபதி ஜனவல்லவாகிரிவர்தாரி. யசோரானந்தன வஜனராஞ்சன யசோரானந்தன வஜனராஞ்சன யமுனா தீரவனசாரி.
நமோ பகவதே வாசுதேவாய. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 18, Text Number 7. Apalita nadrita cha bhavadbir loka palakai chori bhute tha loke hum yagyate prasam usadhi apalitana tritacha bhavadbir loka palakai chori bhute tha loke hum yagyate grasam usadhi apalitana tritacha bhavadbir loka palakai chori bhute tha loke hum yagyarte grasam ushadhi apalitana tritacha bhavadbir loka palakai chori bhute tha loke hum yagyarte grasam ushadhi. Ladies, apalita, without being taken care of, anadrita, being neglected, cha, also, bhavadbhi, like your good self, lokapalakai, by the governors or kings, chori bhute, being beset by thieves. Atha, therefore, loke, this world, aham, I, yagya arte, for the purpose of performing sacrifices. Agrasam, have hidden, osadi, all the herbs and grains. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. My dear King, Not only are grains and herbs being used by non-devotees, but as far as I am concerned, I am not being properly maintained. Indeed, I am being neglected by kings who are not punishing these rascals who have turned into thieves by using grains for sense gratification. Consequently, I have hidden all these seeds which were meant for the performance of sacrifice. Purport. That which happened during the time of Prithu Maharaj and his father, King Vena, is also happening at this present moment. A huge arrangement exists for the production of large-scale industrial and agricultural products, but all these products are meant for sense gratification. Therefore, despite such productive capacities, there is scarcity because the world's population is full of thieves. The word chori bhute indicates that the population has turned to thievery. According to Vedic understanding, men are transformed into thieves when they plan economic development for sense gratification. It is also explained in Bhagavad Gita that if one eats food grains without offering them to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Yajna, he is a thief and liable to be punished. According to spiritual communism, all properties on the surface of the globe belong to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The population has a right to use goods only after offering them to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the process of accepting prasad. Unless one eats prasad, he is certainly a thief. It is the duty of governors and kings to punish such thieves and maintain the world nicely. If this is not done, grains will no longer be produced and people will simply starve. Indeed, not only will people be obliged to eat less, but they will kill one another and eat each other's flesh. They are already killing animals for flesh. So when there will be no longer grains, vegetables and fruits, they will kill their own sons and fathers and eat their flesh for sustenance. Please repeat the translation. My dear King, not only are grains and herbs being used by non-devotees, but as far as I am concerned, I am not being properly maintained. Indeed, I am being neglected by kings who are not punishing these rascals, who have turned into thieves by using grains for sense gratification. Consequently, I have hidden all these seeds which were meant for the performance of sacrifice. Amagyena tamurandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshurun mritam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chitanya manobhishtam shtapitam yena bhutale svayam rupa kadamayam dadati svapadantikam vandeham shri guru shri yuta padakamalam shri gurun vaishnavamscha shri rupam sagrachatam sahagana raganatam vitam tam sijivam sadvaitam savadutam parichana saitam krishna chaitanya devam shri radha krishna padam sahagana lalita shri vishakam vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jigatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gorange Radhe Vrindavanishvare Vrishabhanu Sutta Devi Panamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpatrubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivas Adi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Some time back, I was having a discussion with some devotees, and one of the things that came up was that The Bhagavatam class. There's an opinion that some devotees have that Bhagavatam class should be more for discussing Krishna's pastimes and getting more into the kind of nitty-gritty of how to surrender to Krishna. And that other topics that may discuss things like preaching strategy or things like that are more kind of internal, not necessarily to be preached. So I was thinking about that. And then, you know, we come across a purport like this. And I was thinking, why is it that Srimad Bhagavatam has so much of this kind of information? You know, if we are meant to be just kind of concentrating on the nitty-gritty of going back to Godhead and the kind of those details of surrendering ourselves to Krishna and just giving up everything, why would there be so much of this kind of topic in Srimad Bhagavatam? So I was remembering Prabhupada, actually it was my attention came to the fact that we should glorify Srimad Bhagavatam. Srila Gaura Maharaj used to often spend a great deal of time glorifying Bhagavatam. Sometimes he would, you know, about 45 minutes he would be speaking, and then he would say, okay, now we've glorified Bhagavatam, we can begin the class. You know, after maybe an hour and a half of glorifying Bhagavatam, then he would begin the class. So I was trying to remember what Prabhupada said about Bhagavatam, and then I looked in the preface. And I was quite surprised, actually, because, you know, when we read Bhagavatam, when you get into reading Bhagavatam one canto after another, in general, maybe we read the preface one time. You know, the first time we read the Bhagavatam 10 years ago, or however long it was ago, we might have read the preface. But actually, it's interesting to read the preface every now and then. So I'm going to read parts of it to you now. Now, this is Srila Prabhupada's writing. He says, "We must know the present need of human society. And what is that need? Human society is no longer bounded by geographical limits to particular countries or communities. Human society is broader than in the Middle Ages, and the world tendency is toward one state or one human society. The ideals of spiritual communism, according to Srimad Bhagavatam, are based more or less on the oneness of the entire human society, nay, of the entire energy of living beings. The need is felt by great thinkers to make this a successful ideology. Srimad Bhagavatam will fill this need in human society. It begins therefore with an aphorism of Vedanta philosophy, Janmadya Asya Yattaha, to establish the ideal of a common cause. Human society at the present moment is not in the darkness of oblivion. It has made rapid progress in the fields of material comforts, education, and economic development throughout the entire world. But there is a pinprick somewhere in the social body at large, and therefore there are large-scale quarrels even over less important issues. There is need of a clue as to how humanity can become one in peace, friendship, and prosperity with a common cause. Srimad Bhagavatam will fill this need, for it is a cultural presentation for the re-spiritualization of the entire human society. Srimad Bhagavatam should be introduced also in the schools and colleges, for it is recommended by the great student devotee Prahlad Maharaj in order to change the face of demoniac society." So we can see, you know, Prabhupada, this was written back in the 60s, and Prabhupada was seeing the tendency and the trend of the world, and he was seeing where everything is headed. And he could, and he's pointing out to us that there's only one solution for this whole mess, and that is Srimad Bhagavatam. And Bhagavatam covers every aspect of human life. And it shows us how to live that human life perfectly. So there was one more part I wanted to read of this preface. Yeah. Srimad Bhagavatam is the transcendental science, not only for knowing the ultimate source of everything, but also for knowing our relationship with Him and our duty toward perfection of the human society on the basis of this perfect knowledge. So it is very interesting, right in the beginning of the preface, Prabhupada says that, yes, transcendental science, we should know the transcendental science, but also for knowing our relationship with Him and our relationship with Him and our duty toward perfection of the human society. So this is our task. You know, we're not only meant to become perfect ourselves and to realize Krishna consciousness by the different methods which Prabhupada has given us, but also we have a duty toward perfection of the human society. So therefore, we get these kinds of purpose. So, let me see. There was one regarding the importance of Srimad Bhagavatam. Prabhupada speaks, this was a conversation that Prabhupada had in January in 1976 here in Mayapur. Prabhupada said, if a man does not read the Srimad Bhagavatam, then he remains a rascal. Disciple. So, Srila Prabhupada, in the ultimate sense, anything apart from the Vedas is not really knowledge. Srila Prabhupada, no. It may be some fragmental knowledge, but if one wants full knowledge in life, then he must read Bhagavatam, the pastimes, the dealings of the Lord and His devotees. Bhagavad Gita is the preliminary knowledge, A, B, C, D, so that you can distinguish between matter and spirit. And then you should read Srimad Bhagavatam. Formerly, all the great leaders of society knew all these things. Everyone was taught like that. But now, some big, bombastic, blind man is leading all the small, blind men directly into the ditch. Someone is passing as a great leader, great for giving people wrong direction so that they can spoil their lives. The great leader cannot even save himself. He can spoil himself and others very nicely. So, this is the situation that we're in. Some big bombastic leaders are, you know, leading everyone directly into a ditch. Prabhupada is very blunt in his assessment of what's going on in the world. You know, we've got these very big, powerful people driving around in limousines and appearing to be the, you know, the saviors, if you like. Everyone, the whole world is looking to these governments and saying, please save us. You know, and what are they doing? They're leading us directly into a ditch. So this is the problem, you know. Prabhupada is describing here in this purport that a huge arrangement exists for the production of large-scale industrial and agricultural products. But all these products are meant for sense gratification. Therefore, despite such productive capacities, there is scarcity because the world's population is full of thieves. So, you know, we're told the Green Revolution back in the 60s was meant to solve all our problems, that we will produce more agricultural produce, food will become cheaper, you know, the whole world's problems will be solved. And, you know, first of all, there was an agricultural revolution, and then, you know, different types of agriculture were introduced, and it's meant to have been getting better and better and better since the 60s. But what do we see? What do you read in the headlines today? Food prices are going up. Agricultural production is falling. It's like we're given so many promises. You know, the politicians, they give so many promises. Oh, yes, yes, we will sort out all your problems. Vote for us and everything will be solved. We will introduce this policy and we will introduce this policy and have faith in us. And everyone has faith and they vote one man in. And after 5 years, they're disgusted. And then they vote another man in. And after 5 years, they're disgusted. And they vote another one in. Again and again. It's like so foolish. It's so ignorant that they believe the empty promises of these people. Why do they believe it? Because they're also thieves. It's a whole combination of thieves. Everyone is a thief in this material world. So even though that there is this massive, you know, agribusiness, agro-economy, still food is becoming less. And Prabhupada says it will become less until eventually we will start to starve. So this whole falseness, this whole untruth which is being put upon the people, and they're falling for it, who is going to save them? Who is going to save the world? Anyone got any suggestions? Who will save everybody? Prabhupada is saving everybody. We have to actually take this Srimad Bhagavatam and we have to implement what Prabhupada says here. We are the ones that are meant to set the example across the board in every aspect of life. So naturally we have to, you know, we have to be ourselves clear in the fact that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that we have to purify ourselves, and we have to adjust our lives using our intelligence in such a way that we put ourselves in circumstances and situations which are favorable to our Krishna consciousness. That's the first thing. When we discover Krishna consciousness, the first thing we have to do is get ourselves situated properly. Get ourselves in the right situation. Find the right people who can instruct us. This is the first thing. Once we ourselves are situated in Krishna consciousness, then we have a duty towards human society. We have to help the people in the world according to their particular situation. You know, there are so many people of so many different classes in the world, so many different understandings, so many different levels of intelligence. And amongst the devotees, we have to, you know, it's like an army. When you've got when you go into a military campaign, an intelligent general, he looks at the enemy, and he tries to understand the enemy. Who is this enemy? What is their nature? What is their, you know, social outlook on life? Sometimes in war, enemies are defeated by propaganda. You don't even have to fight them. You can just say some things. You put some things on a piece of paper and you distribute it over the population. And in that way, those people, if you know their psychology, you can find the right words to try and change their minds. So, we have this access to this wonderful knowledge of Krishna consciousness in its great diversity. And amongst us, we have to organize ourselves in such a way that we are specific for that kind of person, that kind of mentality. This is, in a sense, why preaching is somewhat different in different parts of the world that you go to. You know, Krishna consciousness in Japan will have a slightly different feature to it than Krishna consciousness in Russia or in the UK or in America. There are different strategies that have to be adopted by each one of these places in order to reach their population. let me see. So it's up to us to convince the people to preach in a very broad way, to have a broad preaching strategy, so that we can produce the kinds of materials, different kinds of pamphlets and presentations. So, and that's also going on here in India, like some devotees are preaching in the colleges and schools like that. And different devotees, I know that down in South India, one devotee, Tejas Prabhu, he's preaching to the farmers. Because Prabhupada told them directly that we should preach to the farmers. And he was saying that, actually I think it was in Hyderabad, Prabhupada wanted to bring the farmers in and convince them that rather than growing your food, growing your produce to sell, simply grow for Krishna. And in this way, the devotees will have everything they need. We won't have to worry about the food. And of course, not just the food, the clothes, everything else that we need. And we can simply do our business of preaching. So he told Tejas Prabhu to have a meeting of these, I can't remember the name he gave them. Kishans, yeah. Have a meeting of the Kishans, the farming people, and convince them. And actually, we find that farming in India is really under a big strain because so many of the farmers are falling into debt because they can't afford to grow food. It's a ridiculous situation, isn't it? Everybody needs food, and yet the farmers are going into debt, and they're committing suicide. There was one report recently of one farmer, just the last week or so. He has a huge store of grains in his house, but he can't sell those grains because there's already a surplus of grains in the godowns, so no one's buying the grains. Meanwhile, he has debts, up to 6 lakhs of debts. So he's got 6 lakhs of debt, and he's got a huge profit of grains. What is he supposed to do? So he drank poison, killed himself. And this is happening. Thousands of farmers in India are committing suicide. Even in America now, they're starting to commit suicide. Where is the sense in this? We all need food, and yet we're creating a situation where farmers are killing themselves. It makes no sense. And what will happen eventually is, Prabhupada describes, if the duty of the governors and kings to punish the thieves and maintain the world nicely, if this is not done, grains will no longer be produced and the people will simply starve. So, you know, if you have no farmers, who's going to produce the food? So it's very short-sighted. And then Prabhupada says that eventually people will actually kill each other to eat each other's flesh. I don't know if you're aware, but actually at the moment around the world, there have been a number of Hollywood movies which have been, they've been depicting situations where people will take to, what's the word, cannibalism. It's becoming a theme. It's interesting, isn't it? It's becoming a theme in the entertainment world now. There are a number of scenarios where, you know, the society collapses and, people are left to their own devices and they form gangs. And then they capture people and eat them. They keep people in underground, you know, basements and things, and they just kind of eat them. So Prabhupada predicted this back in the 60s, you know, and this is actually now becoming a major theme in the entertainment industry, and it's almost as if we're being prepared to accept this reality. People have become so degraded. Prabhupada describes that if you eat meat for any period of time, one of the first things it does is it destroys the quality or the character of mercy. And once a person eats meat, then murder is not a big step to take. If you're already, even if you're not personally killing animals, the fact that you are allowing the animals to be killed and enjoying the taste of the flesh means that your quality of mercy will be, covered. And you will then, the act of murder will not be a big deal for you. You know, it won't, for us as devotees, if a person's been a vegetarian for a long time, to take a life, it's such a difficult thing to do, to this concept of taking a life, to actually even to hit somebody is a difficult step to take. But for someone who eats meat, it's not difficult. And then ultimately, they'll be happy to just capture people and kill them and eat them. And of course there'll be no choice because grains are not being produced. So, you know, it's interesting because even now, even vegetarian things, even things which are supposedly vegetarian that we buy in the market are adulterated. You know, we're hearing about this ghee. There was a recent report in in India that ghee is being mixed with animal fat. You can't even buy ghee. Practically speaking, so many things, nowadays it's almost impossible to buy anything that's been produced other than the raw grains. Even raw ghee is being adulterated. You know, it's like too much. So how can we expect to protect ourselves? We have to produce these things ourselves, which was what Prabhupada wanted us to do way back. Prabhupada asked us to do that. Unfortunately, now here in Mayapur, there's a move for a self-sufficiency group, and some devotees are getting together to start to produce their own food. And this is so much needed, so much needed. So, you know, we have been given this task to save the world. We are the ones. Each one of us has this responsibility to do something to save human society. It's a duty. It's not an option. You know, first of all, we have to ourselves become as strong as we can become. But part of that strength comes from giving ourselves to others. We get mercy by giving ourselves to others. So, it's a task we have to consider. How can we understand the situation of the world? How can we, these people are all thieves. Every one of them, anyone who's not a devotee, is a thief. Because they're not offering their food, you know, that's it. They're a thief. And they will just have to suffer. So somehow or another, we have to help them. So because we're leading up to Rath Yatra, we have to speak something on the pastimes of Lord Jagannath. So there's this one nice magazine, Krishna Kathamrita Bindu. And this one is entitled The Hidden Identity of Lord Jagannath. So there were a few things I wanted to speak from here. This is a little story called Jagannath's Sannyasi Form. This is from Srila Kavi Karnapura's Chaitanya Chandradaya Natakam. This is from chapter 3. One day, when Maharaj Prataparudra was looking at Lord Jagannath, he saw that the Lord had become Sri Chaitanya, the greatest of sannyasis. "What am I seeing?" thought the king. So to confirm his vision, he asked the pujari, "What are you seeing?" The pujari said, "I am seeing Lord Jagannath." The king replied, "I don't want to disappoint you, but I am seeing a sannyasi sitting on the throne of Lord Jagannath. Perhaps, fearing my punishment, you are saying you don't see anyone except Lord Jagannath. Now tell me the truth. What are you seeing?" So you can understand, you know, the king is there, and he's looking on the altar, and he's seeing a sannyasi sitting there. You know, so he's asking the pujari, you know, "What are you seeing?" So the pujari is saying, like, "The king is asking me what I'm seeing, you know, I'm seeing Lord Jagannath." And then the king is saying, "Look, you know, I don't want to disappoint you, but I'm seeing a sannyasi sitting there, and maybe you're worried that I'm going to punish you if you say the wrong thing. So, you know, be honest now, tell me, what are you really seeing?" So, you know, he says, the pujari says, "I'm sorry, I don't see anything but Lord Jagannath." So King Prataparudra thought to himself, "Then why am I seeing a sannyasi with my eyes? I've heard unlimited glories about this sannyasi. Now let me find out for myself." Then he went to visit Lord Gauranga, the greatest of the sannyasis. He found Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his followers sitting in the Totogopinath temple, chanting the names of Hari and talking about Vrindavan. The next time the king took darshan of Lord Jagannath, he again saw Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instead of Lord Jagannath. Gaurahari looked like the effulgent golden mountain of Sumeru. Astonished, the king became convinced that Lord Jagannath had now incarnated as a sannyasi. जगन्नाथ बल्लभ सुभद्र की जय, महाप्रभु की जय। There's one verse here. It says, they are both full of mercy. They both yearn to deliver the entire world. Although they appear as two persons before the eyes of this world, there is in truth no difference between Lord Chaitanya, who is internally the son of Nanda Maharaj, and Lord Jagannath, the wooden form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So there's another story about, let me see, find it here. my bookmark moved. Now here we go, 12 main festivals. Excuse me, I just want to find this one. There was one nice story about Lord Jagannath appearing as Lord Ramachandra. I just want to find that. Oh, here it is. Among the different ways Lord Jagannath is seen by his various worshippers, he is also identified with Lord Ramachandra. The Niladri Archana Chandrika is one of the Puja Padatis manuals instructing the system of worship of Lord Jagannath in Puri. The Ramnavami section of the book describes, the mighty armed Jagannath is directly Raghunandan, Lakshman is Baladev, and Subhadra is Sita. The mighty Bhima, who appears in front of Jagannath as his blazing weapon, Sudarshan, is Hanuman, the son of the wind god. Together, these four forms, beginning with R, are worshipable. The scene described in this verse is carried out in a special ceremony for Lord Jagannath called Danda Chatra Niti. The day that Tulasidas had a vision of Lord Jagannath as Ramachandra was a Thursday, and on the lunar calendar, it was Ekadashi. In honor of that event, to this day, whenever Ekadashi falls on a Thursday, the temple observes the Danda Chatra Niti function. The Bitara Chu Mahapatra, a deity room sevak, on behalf of Lord Balaram, acts like Lakshman and holds a stick with an umbrella over the head of Lord Jagannath, who represents Lord Ramachandra. Meanwhile, the Palika Makapa, on behalf of Sudarshan, serves the feet of the Lord like Hanuman, and Goddess Mahalakshmi sits on the Ratna Simhasan as Sita. In addition to the Danda Chatra Niti observance, there are two dresses worn by Lord Jagannath that evoke the mood and pastimes of Lord Ramachandra. These are known as the Ram Raj Vesh and the Raghunath Vesh. The Ram Raj Vesh is offered at the time of the above-mentioned Danda Chatra Niti, and also when the day of Ram Nami, Lord Ramachandra's appearance day, is connected with the Pushya Nakshatra. The day of offering the Raghunath Vesh is also connected with the Pushya Nakshatra. At the time of his royal coronation, the Gajapati King Maharaj Ramachandra first offered this dress to Lord Jagannath and established Jagannath as the emperor and himself as the Lord's deputy. In honor of this day, Ramachandra Dev ordered that the Raghunath Vesh should be offered to Lord Jagannath whenever the Pushya Nakshatra occurs in the month of Vaishakha. The Raghunath Vesh is said to be the most attractive, expensive, and luxurious of all Jagannath's dresses. Due to the exorbitant cost, it has only been offered a few times since the reign of Maharaj Ramachandra. According to records cited by the Oriya scholar Ashutosh Nayak in his book Sri Jagannath Parava Purvani, This dress has been offered perhaps a dozen times in recorded history, the latest being in 1905. So there's a representation of that dress. You can see it there. A bit more. And then there's one more. Yeah. There's another reason. There's another pastime where Lord Ram appeared as Lord Jagannath when Tulsidas visited. So it's said that through the Ramayana, the sage Tulsidas came across a verse where Lord Ramachandra instructs Ravan's younger brother Vibhishan. He said, "O mighty ruler of the Rakshasas, there is one more thing I wish to say to you. Worship Lord Jagannath, the lord of the Ikshvaku dynasty." Hearing this, Tulsidas developed a great desire to have darshan of Lord Jagannath, and he set out from Kashi, Benares, walking the great distance to Puri. There was a place known as Tulasi Sarovar in Orissa between Katak and Bhubaneswar, where Tulsidas is said to have taken rest in the night. He again stopped at the village of Dandasahi on the northern bank of the river Bhargavi, just a few miles from Puri. In memory of his brief stay there, the villagers installed the deity of Hanuman, who is still there today. Arriving at Jagannath's temple in Puri, he went inside to offer his obeisances to the Lord. A great devotee of Lord Ramachandra, Tulsi was disappointed to see the forms of Jagannath, Baladev, and Subhadra with no apparent sign of his beloved Lord Ram. With a heavy heart, Tulsidas left the temple without taking any food or drink and walked about 6 miles away to a village named Malatipatapur, where he took shelter on a raised platform under a banyan tree near the road. The local tradition describes that while sleeping that night, Tulsidas had a dream. He saw the goddess Lakshmi Devi telling Lord Jagannath, "My lord, no devotee leaves Puri without taking prasadam." But Tulsidas left discouraged, didn't honor anything, and is now fasting. Tulsidas saw that Lord Jagannath then took the form of a young boy and came to where Tulsidas was resting. Jagannath asked him, "What have you written in your Sri Ram Charitamanas about the nature of the Absolute Truth?" Tulsidas replied, "He walks without feet, hears without ears, and performs his many actions even without hands. He enjoys all tastes without a mouth, and is the most clever speaker, even though devoid of a tongue. He touches without a body, sees without eyes, and smells all without a nose. His activities are so wonderful that they are beyond all description." The Lord then said, "Isn't this the form of Jagannath you have seen in the temple?" Tulsidas immediately woke up. For the rest of the night he chanted the holy name of Ram. Early the next morning he ran all the way to the Sri Mandir, contemplating the dream. This time when he entered the temple, Tulsidas saw Ram and Lakshman with Sita sitting between them. Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai, Jagannath Baladev Subhadra ki jai. Are we meant to stop now, or have we got a few more minutes? A few more minutes are there? Tulsidas then heard the voice of Lord Ram. Sorry, he heard the voice of the Lord. "O saint, behold he whom you consider to be different from Ram. We are the same. For those who want to see me in that way, I possess hands, legs, ears, eyes, nose, and mouth. I take the form in which my devotee desires to see me." The Bhagavatam states, "O my Lord, you are so merciful to your devotees that you manifest yourself in the particular eternal form of transcendence in which they always think of you. Tulsidas realized his fault and became so emotional that he could not control himself. Tears rolled down his eyes as he bowed down with deep reverence and sang the glories of the Lord. Tulsidas then returned to the place where he had the dream of Jagannath. According to the local tradition, seeing the flag of Lord Jagannath's temple, he sang, "Please recite the holy name of Ram and Hari." Tulsidas sees the flag of the Jagannath temple, by viewing which one can be freed from all sin. Seeing the moon-like face of the Lord, one can enjoy eternal bliss. That place later became known as Tulsi Chowara. Again, a deity of Hanuman was installed in that place to commemorate Tulsidas's visit. That deity, along with the Tulsi pillar that is said to have decorated that village courtyard when Tulsidas first visited there, are still worshipped in a small temple in Tulsi Chowara. A temple was later constructed at the place in Puri where Tulsidas stayed during his visit to the Jagannath temple, now known as Siddha Hanuman or Siddha Mahavir. The local tradition states that this is the place where Hanuman came to stay after Lord Ramachandra left this world. The temple is still present today and is located about half a mile northeast of the Gumbicha temple off the Puri Konark Road. The Siddha Hanuman temple is considered one of the Asta Mahavir Mandiras, the 8 most important Hanuman temples in Puri. The deity of Hanuman there is very beautifully carved. He is about 6 feet high, holds a club in his left hand, and the mountain Gandhamadana in his right. Around the deity are smaller figures which are considered to be Sugriv, Jambavan, Bali, Angad, and other associates of Hanuman. So it's nice how Lord Jagannath appears in these different ways to his devotees, and he appears as Lord Ramachandra for Tulsidas. Okay, so I'm going to stop there. Any questions or comments? Yes.
Speaking with relation to Mother Earth being sick and harassed.
Sorry?
Speaking in relation to Mother Earth's not giving grains, not supplying grains. Now, if we apply the situation to the present world scenario, one could say that it's only devotees who could give a reason or give a hope for Mother Earth to give out her grains, because devotees, they do the sacrifice and then Vishnu is pleased and then Mother Earth gives out grains. But then every devotee's prime duty should be to make Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu famous, which is his desire. And if that is a very, if that is done very in a very cherished manner, I don't know if the word is cherished is written anywhere in the book, but
which word?
Cherished in the sense that when we find some wealth, a great wealth, we want to, and if we want to share it, we will see that we talk about the wealth with a person who we can trust. So in the same manner, if we give out the holy names in a cherished manner, then I would say then Mother Earth would have a reason to give out her grains, and then there would be a lot of auspiciousness by that. If everyone makes one's prime duty to make Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu famous, which is his desire, which I think would be the mission's desire also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Srila Prabhupada, there's so many ways in which we can make the Lord famous. And like, for instance, Prabhupada himself, how was it that he attracted the devotees? No. Prabhupada, I was reading just this morning, Prabhupada was describing about how when he first came to America, He said, I was practically loitering in the street. He said, at one point he was cooking in one person's home. And the person was considering, I've got a free cook. You know, the person was taking Prabhupada for granted. And, you know, Prabhupada was a beggar. He had nothing. But he just gave himself to people. When people would come along, he just gave them full attention. And he... the devotees could see that Prabhupada was selfless, that he was just... He'd only come to America to help them. And when these different people came, like Mukunda and Shamasundar and various, the very first devotees of ISKCON, Prabhupada gradually won them over by his taking care of them, by taking care of them, by cooking for them, by arranging for their marriages, you know, all these kind of apparently mundane things. Prabhupada was personally doing that. He gave himself completely to those devotees. And because he did that, they gave themselves to him. So it seems the most effective way to preach is to actually do like that, is to give ourselves 100% to others. And that means that apart from, you know, as a part of giving yourself, it's being exemplary in what we do, in the way we live our life. So because of the fact that we are meant to, you know, Krishna consciousness is for everybody, whether you're a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya or Shudra, it's for everybody. And so everybody will have their way of demonstrating Krishna consciousness. The Brahmanas will be the most effective in learning, you know, the philosophy of Krishna consciousness and then being able to explain it in so many different ways in order to reach people.
On that point, I would say that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is so attractive, his glories are so attractive that it can turn a Shudra also into a Brahmana, a first class Vaishnava. Would mean that he is greater than a Brahmana in intellect or in any manner. So in the same line, I would like to say that the impersonalist, whose main object is their own sense gratification, but using Krishna and his paraphernalia as means, and then their ultimate goal is to merge into the Brahman. So such kind of brahmanas or jnanis, their association, I would say, should be given up. And also, Shastra also says that their association should be given up, just as one would give up a dead body. And their places should be abandoned. And even if their places look beautiful, and even if their small kids, five-year-old kids, speak nice philosophy about Krishna, devotees are forbidden to loiter. But as devotee, one would, from the core of their heart, pray for them. Pray that they become personalist and glorify Krishna. And impersonalists, I don't think they have anything to contribute to help Mother Earth give her grains out.
Okay, Guruji?
Hare Krishna. There was a study done on Ayurvedic science. They were studying why has the scope and popularity of Ayurved, why hasn't it really increased so much? Because it's such a great science. So one argument was given that the Ayurvedic schools that were teaching Ayurved, they were combining Ayurvedic science with allopathic modern science. So the hospital now, if you study Ayurved, then you good chance you will be taught Ayurvedic science as well as modern science. And that's one reason for that is because people in this world, they have faith in modern science. So to bring in Ayurved, they're taking in something else. But the person who gave the argument, he said, that actually the Ayurvedic, the popularity and scope of Ayurved would have been much more greater, and it would have become more popularized if it had been purely taught.
Right.
This was an argument given.
Yeah.
One thing about this teaching in proportions. What do you teach? How much proportion of this? How much proportion of that? Bhanu Swami Maharaj, he said that the Srimad Bhagavatam is mainly about bhakti. And he said the reason why there's a little bit of vana, there's a little bit of other things, worldly duties and other things. He said there's a little of it, it's mainly about bhakti. And he said the reason is to attract the people. He said you just give them a little, just like a little superficial thing, you give them a little, but you bring them in.
Right.
But when they come in, you give them the main thing.
Right.
This is what.
Yeah, it's interesting because when it comes down to it, the only people that are really qualified to prescribed medicine are devotees, brahmanas, people who are honest or not thieves, who don't have any profit motivation. Nowadays, medicine has fallen into the realms of those who want to make profit. And so therefore, it's, what's the word? It's watered down. It's like, it's just the profit is the motivation. Whereas Prabhupada describes that the devotees, the brahmanas, they understood how Ayurveda works, and they were qualified. Some brahmanas will study, like Dronacharya studied the martial arts. So some brahmanas will study martial arts, some brahmanas will be more interested in Ayurveda. But in general, they all have, devotee brahmanas all have Krishna consciousness as the topmost. But they'll be able to, just like Prabhupada, sometimes if someone would come in front of him in Guru Puja with some sickness or something, Prabhupada immediately tells him, take this medicine, do this thing, do that thing. Because there's no profit motivation, therefore that you can get actual truth. So in that sense, because of the fact that ultimately devotees have to take over, ultimately the idea is that devotees should take over the world. Not that devotees should take over the world, but we should make everyone devotees. So as more and more people become devotees, then we will have more facility to actually cater to the needs of the full human society. What do we need to actually exist in this world? In a very honest way. So that's the ultimate idea, is that we should become very honest and pure, and then we can take whatever is necessary for what Krishna provides us for our sustenance, and we just simply give that. We're only interested in the basic minimum for our sustenance so that we can chant Hare Krishna nicely, keep clean and pure and healthy, isn't it? So brahmanas are the ones who ultimately should be dispensing this knowledge of Ayurveda. There's no need to mix in any of these other nonsense things. Okay, so we'll end there. Shubhagatam ki jai. Thank you.